You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Le Grand Bornand.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in our chalet at the Chalet La Gieta.
I think that's right. It's written La Gietas, but I was told many times by all Savoyards, it's La Gieta, or you don't say La Clusa, Avoria.
Alpe d'Huez.
No, of course, I mean, it would be too logical to be French.
So. Some people do say Alpe d'Huez, though, no?
I don't think so. I think it's always Alpe d'Huez, but it's much more down south. I don't. It's really typical to that area. That's
Avoriaz.
Yeah, there's a dispute there. It's never been sorted out.
I mean, we're in the Alps, though.
We are.
That's right.
Sorry, we made it. Thank you.
We made it to the Alps because the rest day yesterday was. I don't want to overplay, pour on. How much we suffered yesterday, but we did spend about 8 or 9 hours in the car, traveling down from northeastern France down to the Alps. Encountered a lot of bad traffic on the way, and it meant that for the first time ever, we failed to put out a podcast that we planned to put out on the day we planned to put it out.
Yeah, although we have taken rest days off before, but at the Giro we started our press conference podcast where we take. Answer listeners' questions, and we have got lots of questions, so it was frustrating that we couldn't get through them.
There's some crackers. We'll record it tomorrow.
We're going to do it tomorrow evening, and that will go out, and that you'll just have to add that somehow to your week's listening.
Yeah.
And also, the worst lunch since I've joined the cycling podcast, I think we had yesterday our way down.
It was a bad day, but it finished well because we did an event on the outskirts of Annecy last night at our friend's base camp.
Yep.
And that was in Tawar.
Extraordinary. Jonathan Vorters and Doug Ellis from Team EF Education First just spontaneously joined us on stage for the second half of our chat and answered some questions from the audience.
And they were good.
They were excellent. Yeah, it was a really good fun evening. And here we are at the chalet. We've been invited back. We were here 2 years ago, weren't we, Richard?
Mm-hmm.
From the BFT. Before FT, before Francois Tomaso. And we did a little event here, and Chris Cole from the chalet invited us back, and so we are here, and a bit later on this evening, we will, we'll do a bit of live podcasting that won't be recorded and put out.
But I'll try this again. We're in the Alps, and we had our first mountain stage of the Tour de France today. Lionel, can you give us the tale of the attack? I should also say we've been joined by Orla Chinoui.
Yep.
She is currently checking into her hotel, and she'll be back soon. She may be able to join us on the podcast, but she was here today, and she's here for the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
But today was La Course by the Tour de France for the women. And what a belting race that was. That will feature in tomorrow's Kilometre Zero, supported by Hans Grohe, and also in the second podcast, Femina, which comes out later in the week.
Yeah, lots of coverage of that. So we won't be covering La Course in this evening's episode. We'll be focusing on Stage 10 of the Tour de France from Annecy to Le Grand Bornand, over the Col de la Coiffrie, the Monte du Plateau des Glières, Col de Rome, and the Col de la Colombière. And the headlines are that Julian Alaphilippe has won his first Tour de France stage. He won a stage of the Vuelta last year. He won Flèche Wallonne earlier this season. He's now added a Tour de France stage with a really impressive attack on the Colombier, where he got away from the remains of a big break. This morning, Francois spoke to Greg Van Avermaet, the yellow jersey wearer, who insisted in French to Francois that today was absolutely his last day in yellow. Well, it wasn't, because he got in that 21-man break and it has extended his lead extraordinarily. He is now, what is he?
2 minutes 22 ahead, over Geraint Thomas.
Yep, ahead of Geraint Thomas. So another day in yellow for the BMC Racing rider, who's been the man of the first week, really. We'll actually hear from his team's owner, Jim Okovic, in the third part about the new sponsorship deal / merger. He'll clear up a little bit of that. But anyway, that's to come in the third part. But yeah, Greg Van Avermaet was in that break. Tony Galopin was in there. Jon Izagirre of Bahrain was in there. Alaphilippe and Philippe Gilbert of Quick Step, of course. Peter Sagan of Bora Hansgrohe was in there with a teammate, Lucas Postelberger, and Sagan hoovered up loads of points and he now has a lead of 101 over Fernando Gaviria in the green jersey competition. Who else was in there? Serge Pauls and Tom Jelte Slagstad of Dimension Data.
David Gaudin, you know, my little, you know, Frenchman, the one we think could one day be a Grand Tour rider.
I was getting to the Frenchman, Francois, don't worry. David Gaudin, Mola, Moinar, Calimajan, Guillaume Martin were all in there, and so was Ryan Tarame of Direct Energy. Anyway, the most important things about the stage were that, well, Mikel Landa crashed in the neutralised section. You know, it seemed important at the time, but now, you know, just one of those little footnotes. Alaphilippe was the first to reach the gravel road at the Plateau Degliere. And Chris Froome punctured there as well and got back. Ryan Tarame was in front for quite a while on the Col de Rome, and it was that move which Alaphilippe basically countered, bridged up and then passed Tarame, and really there was no looking back for him. And he got over the top of the Colombier and descended down into Le Grand Bornand and won. The GC favourites, well, will maybe hear from Luke Roberts what he thought would happen.
Yeah, I think everybody's always a little bit uncertain after a rest day. The first day in the high mountains, so, you know, most guys are a little bit on the defensive. First, see how the legs are. Even if they have good legs, is it too early to attack already and try something? It's not an uphill finish today. So, yeah, I would I'll be surprised if we see fireworks today.
So that's Luke Roberts, sports director of Team Sunweb. Tom Dumoulin's team, of course, predicting very little happening in the group of the GC favourites. And to a large extent, that was true. There were some riders who lost time. Bauke Mollema, Ilnur Zakarin and Rafał Majka all lost 51 seconds to the GC group. Rigoberto Urán, who, of course, crashed on the cobbles a couple of days ago, 2 minutes 36. So
Bob Jungels lost a bit of time.
Bob Jungels lost a little bit of time as well, yeah. But Urán, Jonathan Vaughter said that today was the crunch for him. How would he go on the climbs? And, well, now we know the answer. At the other end of the peloton, there was similar drama because Mark Cavendish, Marcel Kittel and Dylan Groenewegen made it inside the time cut by just 28 seconds. And we'll hear from Dimension Data's sports director, Rolf Aldag, about the nervous wait for that. So Greg Van Avermaet is in yellow for another day. Peter Sagan is well ahead in the green jersey. Julian Alaphilippe is now in the polka dot jersey as King of the Mountains, and Pierre-Roger Latour is now in white. 1 minute.
He's not Pierre-Roger Latour, though.
Yeah, he's Pierre Latour. Yeah, you can call it Pierre. I know it's. I don't know why in the ASO races he's always referred to as Pierre-Roger, but it makes him laugh. You know, even his mother never called him Pierre-Roger. You can go with Pierre Latour.
We can just call him Pierre Latour.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah. You can.
Lionel Roger Burney.
Anyway, he's in the white jersey, Roger Latour, 1:54 ahead of Guillaume Martin. Soren Knau Andersen has slipped to third place after losing time today. Bit of a bumper tail of the etape there. Sorry about that, but we got a lot in.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Hi, I'm Ed from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that cycling is the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We've 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world with 300 rides a week and thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Without their support, we wouldn't be here covering the Tour de France. And we hear a message every day from somebody at Rafa inviting you to go and ride with them. If you have gone and ridden with Rafa, let us know. Send us a tweet, a Facebook message, an email at contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. Share your experiences of riding with Rafa, or indeed just watching the Tour de France in one of the Rafa clubhouses. It wasn't a thrilling stage. The excitement was, well, Alaphilippe is an exciting rider, and it was a great stage win for him. Well, Orla spoke to Philip Gilbert at the finish, didn't she? And I think you, Francois, spoke to Wilfred Peters, the sports director. Shall we hear from both of them now?
Oh, sure.
Philip Gilbert, sure. And then Wilfred Peters.
So, fantastic win for Julien today. Was that the plan from the very beginning, that the team would get behind him?
Yeah, he had with this stage in the head, you know. They came here to recon,
and he was really on. And we spoke together, and we wanted to be together in break. And we tried in the beginning after 4 or 5 Ks, but it was headwind, and some guys were like chasing us. So he told me just stay calm and we go when it's harder on the climb. And it was a big group going on, and we were there, so it was perfect. And I told him I just need 1 minute to recover, because I was the last one to come back. I didn't pull the first minute, and then I was putting full gas to make the gap.
He's got such talent. What was it about today's stage that he felt suited him in particular?
Yeah, he had all the qualities to win today, because you had to be able to climb, but also to descend. It was a quite technical descent. And he have both, so I think he was ready for this. Now also he have the Pocatos jersey, so it's going to be a really nice atmosphere for him as a French also in his own country.
Was it a plan to send Julien in the break today?
Yeah, I think we have not too much chance that the break we go to the final, and we think today was one of this. And okay for that, we have a good guy in the first breakaway, and then he's the strongest one in the breakaway also.
Can it be a goal for Julien now to keep the jersey?
Well, we're looking day by day for the mountain jersey.
It was really impressive from Alaphilippe, wasn't it? I mean, we've seen him. He can cope with short, steep climbs. He's very explosive. But that's the first time I've really seen him ride like that on what you would consider Tour de France-type mountains.
Yeah, I mean, we've known for a while that how gifted Alaphilippe is. I mean, you know, he was a little bit too... well, he said today, actually, at the finish, that, you know, his problem until now was the lack of patience. He tended to attack too early. He was a little bit too, you know, kind of swashbuckling. I mean, he's a very interesting character. He's nice. He's kind of swashbuckling. He's exuberant. He has great talent. We had a first glimpse of his climbing abilities in Paris-Nice, not last year but the year before, when he won a time trial up, Mont Brouilly, and that day he really beat really good climbers. So he showed he had the legs. What he did today, I mean, it's only I think rewarding that at long last he finished second many times in classics, in the Tour de France stages, and he was the just reward of a real great talent. We don't know, he's not Grand Tour winner material, but I mean, he should win lots of, you know, great classics. He should win, you know, more Grand Tour stages. As you said, he won in the Giro last year. He won the Flèche Wallonne this year.
In the Vuelta last year, sorry.
Yeah, the Vuelta. He's a real, really... He's just an exciting rider. He attacks all the time. He was... The main reason why he attacked today, and he said it, you know, he was expected to be at his best, having won the Flèche Wallonne in Mur de Bretagne and in the previous stage in Brittany as well. And he was really kind of, you know, vexed and frustrated of not doing anything. And he went for it. You know, it's the kind of victories we like, because I mean, for me today, two great riders really were impressive while the GC leaders were waiting. Julien Alaphilippe, the way he went for it, and Greg Van Avermaet, which was kind of a bold move with the yellow jersey to break away.
Yeah, we don't see that very often, do we? And it was interesting that everybody let that go. I mean, Team Sky, Geraint Thomas really this morning was poised to inherit, take over the yellow jersey, and if it had all gone to form how you would expect, then that is what would have happened. And Geraint Thomas, as we've made a point, he has been trying to take that yellow jersey. He's gone for a few of those bonus time bonuses in the sprints, and you know, he was edging ever closer, and then Van Avermaet was stretching away, and now of course Van Avermaet has stretched 2:22 ahead, but we can't see Van Avermaet pulling off the same trick again tomorrow. But Rich, Team Sky, they rode as if they had the yellow jersey today, and you would look at the GC now and say, well, Geraint Thomas is 2:22 back on Van Avermaet, and Alejandro Valverde is in third, 3:10. That's a handy little cushion that Thomas has got for tomorrow.
Does it matter if they don't have the yellow jersey, if they're going to ride like that anyway? I mean, they rode today, as you say, as if they had the yellow jersey. Geraint Thomas pointed out the last time Greg Van Avermaet had the yellow jersey, he rode the same way. He attacked in the yellow jersey. Mm. So attack is the best form of defence. I'm trying to think of when we've seen it before. Claudio Chiappucci in 1990 attacked when he was in the yellow jersey. But, you know, Van Avermaet isn't really a kind of outsider like Chiappucci was to win the race. He's stretching his his time in yellow as long as possible. But he is a decent climber. I mean, he showed today he's a decent climber.
I think he's always been a decent climber. I was asking myself today if they didn't let him go out of respect for what it is, for the rudder is, saying, well, it's great, let Greg do his show, and I mean, he won't be a threat in the long term, but let's not chase for the yellow jersey because he deserves to have it in the first place, because there's another guy who attacked with the yellow jersey on, and it's Greg Van Avermaet on the cobbles, which is another thing. So he's a guy who respects the yellow jersey, the more so as he attacks with the yellow jersey on his back, which is very rare.
Yeah.
So, chapeau.
Well, he won on Le Lyonnais 2 years ago. We mentioned that earlier in the tour. Not a super tough finish, and certainly nowhere near as tough as tomorrow. But no, a really good effort by Van Avermaet this week. But Rich, Team Sky, they must be reasonably happy with how they are.
Let's try that again, shall we? I know you were looking
I was teeing you up.
I was waiting at the Team Sky bus with the masses, a lot of people there, and I did manage to get some words from Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome. Let's hear from them now. Geraint Thomas and then Chris Froome.
I played the ball perfectly into your path and you wellied it over the stand.
Yeah, it was a real good ride by the team, but it was still hard. It was some steep climbs, and we were expecting it to sort of really kick off on somewhere on the last two, but never really materialised. But I guess it's a bit of a headwind on the last climb, and Criato was riding a real good tempo. So, with two big days to come, everyone's probably just sort of saving it a bit, or on the limit, I don't know. But it was a good day, I guess.
We couldn't have asked for much more, really. I think it was pretty steady. Good ride by Alaphilippe out front to take the stage, and obviously of Greg to be in the break and to hold on to yellow jersey for another day. From our side, I think we were pretty happy to have the numbers up front, and for the first big mountain day, I think the guys really showed exactly what we've been training for. So it's great to see that we had the numbers there. Everyone's got their own game plan. Other people probably also thinking about these next few hard days coming up. Of course, there was the odd comment on the road or odd negative fan out there, but this is the Tour de France. That's how it is.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Whether you're grinding up the French Alps or just taking your mates on a local loop, Science in Sport Rego Rapid Recovery Plus will help you recover faster after your ride, so you're ready to go again the next day.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. A reminder that you can get 25% off all your Science in Sport products at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. Now, I suppose if we're looking for stories from today, it's Rigobert Urán, a confirmation really that he's quite bandaged up. Jonathan Vaught has said last night that he wasn't sure how he'd respond to his crashes on the cobbles, but we saw today he was in trouble a lot, and he was isolated as well. He didn't have a lot of support. We expect that Education First will play kind of the Pierre Roland card, maybe try for a stage win with him now.
That may be the reason why Pierre Roland didn't wait for Urán when he was in trouble, because now it's probably the only card left to be played. Probably Pierre Roland in the past showed that he's very good in the Alps and not so good in the Pyrenees, so maybe the only chance for Education First to snatch a stage win or some consolation is tomorrow or the day after. And Pierre Roland already won in L'Alpe d'Huez a couple of years ago, and he likes short, hilly stages as well. As for Rigoberto Urán, I talked to Charlie Wegelius, the team director, about his injuries, and he looked really miserable. They probably expected the wounds to be licked in some ways during the rest day, and obviously today it was obvious that he really was badly hurt by his crashes on the cobbles, and Charlie Wegelius made it quite clear that he didn't expect Urán to be any better tomorrow or the day after. So let's face it, he was second last year. Probably his chances to make it even to the well, to the top 20 or top, you know, 30 is probably in danger. So yeah, there was quite a bit of disappointment in the education first camp. And well, maybe let's listen to Charlie Wiggins.
So how about Rigo? I mean, what was wrong? The injury sustained on the cobbles, or
he's pretty sore after that, which is understandable, you know, because he went down two times. He did what he could to limit the damage and came pretty close, but unfortunately, it's the way sport goes. Of course, it's disappointing. A lot of work goes into these races from a lot of people, but that's the way this sport is. It's a brutal sport, and sometimes it turns in your favour and sometimes it doesn't. And you have to accept it because that's the way it is and that's the way life is. I think we should stay optimistic, but also rational, you know, because the pain of these crashes often comes out after 2 or 3 days, and then maybe it goes away and maybe it doesn't. But in the meantime, the tour continues. So we're going to stay calm and we're going to stay rational, and we're going to make as much as we can a fact-based decision.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to Jonathan Vaughters last night talking about how conservatively, defensively they'd started the tour. Everything was about getting Rigoberto Urán through the first 9 days without a problem, and unfortunately they didn't quite manage to do that. Urán crashed a couple of times without great consequences. I think the third of those crashes was the one that caused all the difficulty, and of course, well, I saw it and I think commented on it in the Kilometre Zero about my day on the pavé. They really had a tough time, the EF Education First riders. There was four of them. Urán was on the back when I was at section four, and it was an interesting listening to Jonathan talk about, you know, riders who aren't necessarily used to the cobbles, and I thought team directors who aren't necessarily used to the cobbles, because all the Tour de France directors are here. I don't know who was driving the Bahrain Merida car that I saw right over on the left-hand side of the road that brought the EF riders more or less to a halt, and they actually had to slap on the side of the car to get him to move over. But that cost Urán probably quite a chunk of that time. And today, of course, the injuries have caught up with him and he's dropped out of contention. Really, of the overall riders, Richie Porte, Rigoberto Urán, not that we were considering Warren Barguil as a contender, but he talked about possibly deliberately losing time to try and go to stage wins later on, and he had a little foray off the front, didn't he, and then sat up and then did lose that time, so he may well be
mission accomplished
indeed. Yeah, but in terms of the other sort of GC riders, you know, we saw just a few fault lines with Rafał Majka, Bauke Mollema, Ilnur Zakarin. You know, they're kind of in the B group of GC riders, really. And,
Bob,
and today,
Bob Jungels
found them out a bit.
We know now that, you know, Bob Jungels was probably Rich's favourite. I mean, he's mentioning all the time. But there's a funny thing.
Not as often as Ian Boswell.
That's right.
Or Egan Bernal.
Yeah. True.
There's a funny thing when you look at the standings. That we said it was, you know, it was not a real mountain stage and it didn't make any big difference. But if you look at the top 10 riders in the GC now, you've got all the top GC contenders actually. So the rest of them, the one who, you know, took, you know, benefited from the first week, they're out of the way. So in a way, the kind of, you know, laundry job, as they, you know, as we say in France from time to time, about mountain stages, has been done. You know, the dust has been, you know, taken away. And
Greg Van Avermaet is like the €1 coin that's been left in the washing.
Absolutely, exactly. Nice, very nice metaphor. Yeah?
Anyway, well, let's look at the back end of the race, because there was some drama there as well. We heard Mark Cavendish, Marcel Kittel were off the back pretty early, and the time gap was big. And in terms of making the gruppetto and getting over the line inside the time limit, today was really tricky, because there were the two early climbs, and then there was this horrible kind of uppy downy false flat valley road, and then the last climbs. And for riders who are chasing to get inside the time limit, pretty much the least ideal course for them, and they cut it incredibly fine. The time cut, I think, was 34:30, and they made it with 28 seconds to go. Mark Cavendish, Marcel Kittel, and Dylan Groenewegen were in that final group. And well, I was at the Dimension Data Bus with their sports director, Rolf Aldag, as he was kind of nervously, but also in a cool way, keeping an eye on the clock.
Rolf, are you nervous about the time limit?
Well, I mean, you calculate it all the time for all eventualities, and that's what you have to do if you have sprinters. And then you kind of like live with what it is. You know, you just can't do it. It's not really that anybody slows down on purpose. It's for sure that you don't really want to overdo it. So, you know, you do what you have to do. But I think, you know, if people are out of time limit, it's never really that they plan to do it. It's just the consequence out of a very, very hard race. And sometimes that you just say, okay, you know, it's just not doable. And there are more stages to come, which are even more difficult.
What's the limit today?
Very likely 34 minutes 30. And you know, I mean, like if you calculate Gruppetto speed, really, really like a rough calculation, obviously you lose a minute on a kilometer if you just ride Gruppetto. So by that, you know, you just have to calculate the kilometers of climbing, and then you can figure out when to be dropped and when not to be dropped. Everything else just ends in you just have to go harder than Gruppetto speed, and that really starts to hurt.
So we must be on about 25 or 26 minutes now. So you've just got to hope that there's enough riders in that group and they all come in inside the limit.
Yeah, that's what we hope for, definitely. And, you know, I mean, Roger is with the last group, with the sprinters group. He has a really good feeling. So I think, you know, he's certainly would push and give them a heads up, and then know. So what do we do? We do our own time splits as well. So I give them a click basically when we get over the climb, and then he starts a stopwatch, and then he knows exactly where they are. If it's really, really tight, you don't want to be fooled by a digital delay of television, because you think, oh, they just passed the line, but in reality they passed the line 40 seconds earlier, because this is, you know, it's doable. Sometimes if in the car, if you rely on streaming, then you're up to 2-3 minutes, and you just don't want to be fooled by that. It's just too important. So we try to get it right, and most of the time we do, but it's hard. So if you don't make it simple, it's like not good enough, not able to.
So who does the calculation, and will the riders know it's 34 minutes 30? So as they're coming up the finish straight, they see the clock, yes, They'll know whether they're in or out.
Yeah, and you know, you have your physiotherapist at the finish line, and you look at there, because it pops up at the display. You always do your own prediction and calculation, and so you have a pretty good view. It's like what if and when. So in the morning, you know already 35 average is going to be that, 34 average is going to be that, 37 average is going to be that, and so you are prepared.
Well, here's a couple of riders, three of your riders. Is that a good sign?
That's not the Gruppetto yet. The Gruppetto is Julian Vermoot, so you know, you can track them, we can see them where they are, and that they were together with Julian Vermoot, with Renshaw and Cavendish. So we know pretty much where they are.
Rolf, they made it with 28 seconds to spare. Easy.
Easy. Why would they hurry so much? They should have slowed down a bit.
Never in doubt then. Never in doubt. They made it with 28 seconds to spare. Why be 3 minutes inside when you can be 28 seconds inside? It makes it easier tomorrow.
They're going to have a tough few days, aren't they? We've been joined by Orla Shinawy. Hi, Orla.
Hello.
You were at the Dimension Data bus as well. Mark Candish came back to the bus when we were standing there. Didn't really look in the mood to be interviewed, did he, particularly?
No, he didn't have a very happy face on, did he? What was it you said, Richard? He had a face that you didn't want to stand in front of. I think he was a little bit on the somber side. So yeah, we let him just get back into the bus, really. But there are a few like that today. You can tell we're in the mountains.
I know how they feel. I know how they feel.
Some of the peloton are just in their element, and the rest are just grumpy as sin, which is forgivable. Yeah. It's understandable, I guess. I would be.
Well, they know what's ahead, don't they? And again, the enemy of the sprinters is the short, explosive mountain stage, because the time cut percentages are so unforgiving on days like that. And tomorrow is only 108.5 kilometres, and it basically goes pretty much straight up an all-category climb, and then down, and then up another one with a second-category climb just to kind of cause a bit of indigestion after lunch, and then the final first category climb to La Rosière, which I don't actually know, Francois. I can't remember the tour.
No, I don't think the tour ever went there. It's a place I know well because I used to cover alpine skiing, and it's when you go up to Val d'Isère, which is one of the classics of the World Cup. La Rosière is on the other way, on the other side of the mountain. It's on the sunny side actually, and it's a funny place because it's really close to Italy, and you, in terms of gastronomy, I know it's important to you, Lionel. Mm. You've got the best of both worlds, like, you know, France and Italy within the same place. I don't think it's a very
so you've got pasta served in a slightly grumpy way.
That's right, exactly. which means, I mean, the climb itself is not the hardest climb in the Tour de France not by far. But the thing is, it's the first mountain top finish, so it's always tricky. It's always good for the explosive riders. So it could be interesting tomorrow for sure.
It could be, and we're looking forward to it. And these short stages are great, aren't they, for entertainment? I mean, today was a phony war, and it's interesting when you look at that group of favourites, and Sky really did take control. But you're looking behind to see who the next guys are, and trying to figure out who fancies it and who's kind of hiding a bit. Tom Dumoulin, I mean, he's a big unit, so he is quite visible. But I did see a lot of Tom Dumoulin today up near the front. He had a problem at one point as well, and he was off, you know, having a wheel change, I think. But he looked to me to be quite good today.
Maybe it's a question of staying hidden for the time being. We don't see Adam Yates at all.
Nibali.
No. We don't see Nibali at all. But they're there, you know, they're not far. So
the shark is
He
working.
Really is like the shark in Jaws. You know, you wouldn't even know he's in the water, and then suddenly he's bitten your legs off.
Well, I think that's what people are afraid of. Now, Lionel, at the start this morning, I think you spoke to Jim Mokovits, didn't you?
I did, but surely that's in part three. Do we not need to take a small pause for breath?
Hey, don't forget! You can listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show, every weekday during the 2018 Tour de France. Kilometre Zero is supported by Hansgrohe.
Little reminder there of Kilometre Zero, our morning show, which goes out Monday to Friday. Today was about, well, it stats. Was about stats and data.
I really actually thought, when you suggested it, Rich, I thought, this is not going to work in audio, is it? About websites and data. But it actually really did. I found it really interesting the way that all the teams are, that it's not that they aren't aware of this stuff. In fact, they're hyper aware of all of this information that's out there. What they're striving for and what they're thrashing around for is the way to best apply this information to the races in real time. And the fact that they're, you know, talking about developing apps to make the jobs of the sports directors easier. I mean, the biggest change in the team cars in the last 10 years is that the strategist no longer drives in a lot of cases. The strategist sits in the passenger seat. And, you know, that job is evolving. And when you hear about the way that teams are looking at how do we design the perfect team car of the future, you know, what information do we want that is useful? There's so much stuff out there, but what actually could affect races? And that's the thing that I thought was interesting. We're kind of on the cusp of something, but nobody yet knows what it is.
There's a lot of data now, but people don't really know how to use it. And also, I mean, there's basic things like we don't know where riders are and teams don't know where their riders are yet, as Roger Hammond told us. And you know, they need to get some of the basics right before they can really use the data.
I'm sure some of the traditionalists, you know, will push for UCI to ban all this equipment and apps from the cars, you know, let instinct rule, you know. Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Wow.
Well, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely another side to it. You know, the more information that the riders and the teams have, the more controlled the racing becomes and perhaps the less exciting it becomes. Who knows? But
anyway,
tomorrow's Kilometre Zero, supported by Hansgrohe, is on La Course. Orla, myself and Rose Manley were at the race today from start to finish. And, well, we weren't going to cover it, but Orla, since you're here, I mean, briefly, it was a belting race, wasn't it?
It was an absolutely cracking race. La Course is always a bit of a funny one because it is not so much an afterthought, but it is a bit of a warm-up on any given stage to what's happening in the Tour de France. Last year was interesting because it was at the Col d'Isoir, but the racing this year was just phenomenal. I'm hoarse almost from all the shouting and the screaming because it was really exciting all the way through, and the finish was just thrilling. I loved it. It was brilliant.
And a star was born in Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig, who really set the race on fire. Look, at one point, like she might win it. She's a very talented young Danish rider. She's 22 years old. She had problems at the start of the year, but the last few weeks, she's just clicked through the gears. And today, she looked like she might win the race. And she's a brilliant character as well, and gave a series of wonderful interviews at the finish, all pretty much word for word the same. But nevertheless, it was great.
Can I just share a little teaser of her crucial insider tip if you're struggling on the bike? The recommendation is have a wisdom tooth removed. There wow. you go. Listen out for that wow. tomorrow.
So you can have four good days on the bike once.
I suggested excellent. That you ask Mark Cavendish if he'd had a wisdom tooth. Well,
suggested I would ask it, Richard, while you sidestepped, yes.
Can I make a little nasty remark there? And our listeners will have a little bit of research to do, but La Course is sponsored by FDJ, you know, La Française des Jeux. The team manager of Française des Jeux is Marc Madiou. So if you have a little
bit... A really
bit of,
broad-minded man with absolutely. A very
If you have a little bit of time, go on YouTube and type Marc Madiou, Jeannie Longo, and you might find an old TV program in which Marc Madiou promotes women's cycling in a very awkward way.
Well, and going through the archives, I mean, back in the 80s, Marc Madiou had some interesting things to say about women's cycling.
That's the one.
I think
that's
he's
the one.
Changed his tune. I think he's changed his tune
or just
a little bit.
It.
Or, got a new songbook. Anyway, you spoke to Jimokovic at the start.
Well, yeah, but yesterday was an interesting day in terms of team kind of development. I'm not sure if you covered this in the Cycling Podcast Feminine. Well, yes, you have. You're nodding. Trek are starting a women's team with Lizzie Deignan as their star rider. I'll listen to Feminine when it's released to see what you think of the impact that may have on the Trek Drops team, for example. But that was one big story from yesterday. The other was that BMC Racing, who have had this sort of shadow of uncertainty over them since Andy Reese, the team's benefactor, passed away earlier this year. Well, people more or less thought the team was going to go to the wall. Jimokovic, the boss of the team, the owner of the team, the company that has the license, has been working pretty hard to find an alternative sponsor. And it's been reported as a kind of a merger with the CCC team, which is a Polish team sponsored by a shoe retailer. A very wealthy man owns this shoe company. And it was released on the rest day that these two teams are kind of merging, coming together. Anyway, I spoke to Jimokovic this morning. Jim, what can you tell me about the news that basically broke on the rest day, that the team's future is secured and you're linking up with a Polish team?
Yeah, I mean, we're not linking up with the Polish team. We're being sponsored by a Polish company, CCC, and they have an existing team that we're going to do some synergy with and explore options between us, but they're also going to continue to do some things around cycling that, separate from us. It's early in the game. We just signed the contract on Saturday, and today's I guess it's Tuesday. I lose track of time here, but we're going forward with a great partner, and that's what it's all about.
Can you tell us what the team will be called then, and how many of the current BMC roster will be part of next year's team?
Both questions I can't answer at this moment. That's still being decided by the sponsor. CCC will tell us what they want to call themselves. There's several different options you can do to identify yourself in pro cycling. So they'll come up with that decision, not us, and then we'll follow in line.
How stressful has it been trying to effectively save the team after Andy Reese passed away?
Well, you know, it was hard with Andy, and I was been working on this too for before he passed. So it was hard before, and it was hard after, and so every team will tell you the same thing. It's not an easy task. So Andy played a big role in that with us. He brought the TOG deal in, with his relationship with Jean-Claude Beaver, the CEO. So that exists, still exists today, and will next year. So yeah, Andy was very helpful, but you know, I got to stand on my own two feet now. He's not here to help.
In terms of how the race has gone, how helpful in closing the deal was it that you've had the yellow jersey and you won the team time trial? I mean, talks must have been advanced prior to that, but does those kind of things help get it over the line?
They don't hurt, let's say that. I don't think they push anything over the line, but they certainly don't hurt. Anything you do that's a positive experience in this sport, you know, winning races, wearing the jersey, especially at this time of the year, it has a lot of value.
And lastly, it was a kind of bittersweet weekend for the team because Richie Port crashed out before the cobbles. And you were quoted, there's a quote that's been open to interpretation from you saying about how his luggage will be in Annecy. I mean, can you clear up how you felt about Port pulling out of the race and clear up the conflicting reports about his injury?
Yeah, the conflicting injury, and I'm not the team physician, but our team physician on the site at the finish line was communicating with the hospital, and the information that he got was different than the information that was then confirmed after that. So that's what that was. And his suitcase was in the truck, and he did have to get to Annecy in order to catch up with his suitcase, which would have been the case with anybody else as well.
But you get what I'm kind of driving at. I mean, obviously, the rumor mill at this time of year is rife with stories. We understand that Richie Port is joining another team next year. I mean, again, in terms of you clinching the deal to keep the team going, it must be like spinning plates for you, the way that professional cycling works.
It's complicated.
You can say some more if you want.
No, I don't think I need to.
okay,
thank you.
Well, I'm not sure how much that clears up about the BMC-CCC merger slash... it's not really a merger. We'll have to see how it all comes out in the wash.
We'll have to CCC.
Will they? I mean, people, everyone's done this on Twitter, but will they be called...
Well, some of the day maybe CCC Rider. check it out on YouTube.
Are they going to join the MPCCC?
Team BMCCCCC Racing will be excellent next year. Anyway, the thing about Jim Okovic, I mean, he played a pretty straight bat to my question about Richie Port there. I mean, it seems to me, well, quite an extraordinary reaction to Port crashing out, you know, when Port was a podium potential here. But obviously the survival of the team is probably the bigger thing for him. But what I thought was Okovic is one of the great survivors, isn't he? And I was looking on his Wikipedia page, right? Now, we know Jim Okovic was involved with he founded the 7-Eleven team back in the early 80s that first rode the Giro in 85, I think, and then the Tour de France in 86, and then evolved into the Motorola team where Lance Armstrong turned pro, and then he kind of went away slightly briefly and then was involved with US Postal Service. Then
Briefly.
Then with the Phonak team as an advisor, that was the team Floyd Landis rode for when he won, in inverted commas, the Tour, and then tested positive and was stripped. You know, quite a sort of... And features heavily in the USADA report into...
Quite a checkered history.
Yeah, but yet he's still here. He's like the sort of... I mean, the boxer who's been down on the canvas sort of six or seven times, but still claiming to hold all four belts.
Yeah, it takes resistance to do that, and it will be my piece of French flavor of the day. I mean, we went up Plateau de Glières, which is one of the highlights of the French resistance during the war. And, well, they actually had a song, if you want me to sing a little bit.
Yeah.
So there was a battalion there. The story is, you know, it was the first actually, you know, battalion of French partisans to actually fight the Germans in battle, and not only by, you know, planting bombs and stuff. And the song was, En avant bataillon des Glières, décidé à vaincre ou à mourir, nous vaincrons l'ennemi sanguinaire, nous vaincrons, nous vaincrons, nous vaincrons. That was a bit of French flavor. The other little bit of French flavor is just one word, a word that I know Lionel likes very much, reblochon.
Oh, yes, cheese.
Yum, 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 yum.
Anyway.
Stop dribbling. Well. Anyway, we should wrap things up because we need to go and eat and, yep. and do this event and save our, like, a bit like the GC guys, keep our powder dry for tomorrow because it could be an explosive day. So we look forward to that. Orla, you've got an interesting day planned tomorrow. We'll not reveal what that is, but that's potentially for a kilometre zero, so stay tuned for that. But thank you very much, Orla.
Thank you.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Nearly forgot me.
Never.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Tom Wallin.